Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Once a person has reached the insight knowledge of equanimity, Sankharupakanyana, that means that person is right near the top, right at the top. It also means the mindfulness is very firm and strong. It also means your concentration, the power of concentration is quite strong. And one can observe things continuously, automatically, without much effort, without a break, without a gap. And only danger is, it is so easy you can get into that auto mode and you miss seeing the cessation of each and every object. That one has to be very careful. And once you got to that level, that is the insight level number 11. You keep on practicing. And the next level is called insight knowledge of adaptation, nudloma jnana. And this adaptation, what it is, you try to adapt into this situation, what you have. One thing is, with what you have, and also you are trying to make it ready for what is going to come next, making yourself very receptive and adaptive to this. So there's a two sense of meaning in the adaptation. And what is this adaptation? You got to that number 11, insight knowledge of equanimity. You are observing. And basically, all that you can do is you keep practicing and you keep practicing at that level. And while you are practicing there, make sure that you are always in the mode of seeing or experiencing the cessation of all physical and mental objects. If not, you are on the wrong track. That is one thing, doing it all the time. And in there, it is not accurately written in the books and stuff like that. But there are a few things that yogi at that caliber can do. First of all is, you try to become very adaptable to all the insight that you have already achieved and gone through. First and foremost, we always start with nama rupa paricchida jnana, discriminative awareness between mind and matter. And then on and on and on. And at this level, as your mindfulness momentum is very strong and concentration is quite deep, all that you need to do is you incline. In other words, you make a determination. Okay, today I'm going to experience as many nama and rupa, discernment of mind and matter. When you incline your mind like that, when you have decided, that day most of your experience will be whatever is happening, you will see the mind and matter with very much sharpness and clarity. not only talking about sitting and meditating, and in here is the whole day, everything. Not only I'm talking about the retreat, even in at home while you're staying, at work while you're going, all that you do is you incline your mind, and that strength that you have already acquired kicks in, and you will see, okay, whenever you touching, doing, seeing, talking, things like that, you will see that rupa as purely as a physical phenomenon and nama as a purely mental phenomenon with a great high frequency that day you will experience. Giving a one example, that's all. And in that way too, you can, sometime you can decide that I'm going to experience the causal relationship with mind and matter. That will be the emphasis. And when you put the emphasis, you will come to experience that with high frequency on that particular day or on that particular hour or whatever you have decided. Okay, Aditana, determination, you make it and you will see it. And now you can understand whichever one, number 4 or number 5 or number 10 or whatever that you see, you incline your mind and you go in and you experience it. That doesn't mean that the whole day you will only experience that one. You will also be experiencing many other things as well, but that one that your mind incline will become the highlights or on the stage. So in other words, you are honing in your skills, okay? You are mastering the skills of all the insight that you have experienced, and you can go and you can go and you can go with the mind inclining towards and experiencing it. So honing the skill, or you make yourself, okay, very adaptable to any of the insight that you have experienced, you can call in. That is one way of adaptability. Okay, let's say you go to a law school, you wrote an exam, you pass, you got the law degree. Yeah, you pass, you are able to practice the law. You have a certificate to be a lawyer. But what do you need? You need a lot of practices. You need practicum, and you know, go to training ground, and you actually practice quite a few years to become more and more skillful. That's kind of analogy. You have passed already all these stages, but you have to actually keep on doing it and hone your skill. That is the way one's try to adapt yourself to all the insight that you have already acquired. Now you become more skillful, you have a mastery to it. And in here, of course, you can go do anything you want. Two things that are good in a, let's say, in a busier day. On a busier day is the first two jnana, namarupa, this discernment of mind and matter and causal relationship between mind and matter. On a busy day, okay, normal busy day, those two, if you incline your mind, that is more beneficial. Okay. And also, you can incline your mind to number 4, which is the arising and passing away. That's not so bad at all. But that one you cannot just do in a general basis, but you have to actually sit and call upon that, okay, insight. And in there, not only that you see rising and falling, along with it, you can also call in to experience the PT and Sukha, okay, rupture and bliss. And you go in there, but you don't have to worry too much about it. You have already got to the stage of what you call equanimity already. they come in a fleeting moment, you experience it, in a fleeting moment, they will be gone. Gone not in the sense they are not gone, but they are, keep on vibrating these raptures and bliss, but your mind is unmovable. You know they are, but it doesn't affect you. But at the same time, you know you can call into that zone. That is one. And one thing that is always good is insight knowledge of the solution. Occasionally go right in and go into the point of it's a dizzying space of passing away. And it will keep you grounded. That one will keep everyone very grounded. That also is good. But my teacher told me the first jnana that one could stay in, once you have, even after you have mastery, even if you have attained ariyaship, is the sankharupaka jnana. Okay? The equanimity, that state of equanimity is the best insight that one can spend most of the waking moments in your life. Sankharupaka jnana, that one you go in. So this is how one can hone the skill, develop the skill, sharp the skill, and adapt yourself, master yourself to all the insight that you have already gained. Okay? That is called adaptation. And also what you are doing was you are trying to make yourself, prepare yourself to receive the next coming insight. And that whole series is called Insight Knowledge of Adaptation or Anuloma Jnana, insight number 12. That's the way one goes all the time in. And along with that, okay, we have about a couple of Dharma talks ago, we mentioned about what are the pitfalls, okay, what kind of loophole and little traps can make, and what kind of mental attitude one must keep in mind, that kind of a thing. So that little, what you call, tips to remember, not to fall into the trap, also need to be very carefully guarded and used in. But most of all, it's stay in that equanimous mode and make sure that cessation is always there. As long as you do that, what you do is you practice, you practice, you practice. You have to keep on practicing. You have to practice continuously. You have to practice continuously. Because if you remember this Anuloma Jnana, insight knowledge of adaptation is, what is it? It is the last mile you are going. The last mile that you're going, and you are not going to stop till you got to the finish line, the last mile. And when you are doing that, to be able to go non-stop till you reach the goal is you have to keep on practice, 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 practice. Because you never know. You never know which one. Okay? It might be 3 o'clock in the morning you get up and then you just become aware that you are awake, and then you're aware that you want to open your eyes, and you open your eyes at that moment. That might be the moment you get the first stage of enlightenment. Or it might be while you're eating lunch. You scoop the rice up and you're lifting it, and the moment that you see the rice, and that at that moment you might get enlightenment. Enlightenment come in a flesh, one single little flesh moment. That is the moment you get totally enlightened, totally enlightened to that stage, of course, whichever stage you are in. But don't think that enlightenment comes in a blinding moment, one little nanoseconds like that. To be able to get to that stage, you are practicing and developing a lot of mindfulness, concentration, insight. Just like a big barrel, okay, under the roof, and there's a raindrops coming, the rain's falling and falling and falling and falling. And slowly it filled up. It takes a long time. It may take days and months. And finally, there's one drop. When that drop comes in, it spills over the drum. That drop is the enlightenment or experience of the enlightenment. But for that drop to overspill, you need millions and millions of drops to fill in. So in a way, enlightenment comes in a flash of a moment, but at the same time, in a way, it is the enormous amounts of hours and days and years of great effort that you put in and put in and put in and put in. For that reason, it come in. Don't think that automatically in a one nanosecond you got enlightened. But then enlightenment, the experience of enlightenment comes in that one little flash moment. And that little flash moment is the experience. You actually experience the mega jeta, in other words, part consciousness. Let's say the first part consciousness. And when you experience that part consciousness, at that moment, that part consciousness is so strong and powerful, it has the quality to totally eliminate, okay, a certain kind of mental defilements based on the level that you are in. And those mental defilements are totally uprooted, eliminated, and gone. And that is the power of that part consciousness. Okay. Everything is that part consciousness is the understanding of the nature of mind and matter to us, to this certain degree of extent based on the level. As soon as that understanding comes, a certain respective mental defilements are totally gone. Okay. And just to simplify it, I think I have talked before, give this example before. Let's say you are in grade 6. That's a mathematics. In Asia, like I don't know the Western education. In Asia, that's mathematics. And your arithmetic, you are calculating, you are clearly there's a lot of what you call problems that you need to solve, mathematical problems you have to solve, and it is just go round and round and round and round and very difficult and couldn't, and sometimes you got the right answer, sometimes you got the wrong answer. That's the way it's going. You are trying. But one day, you thoroughly understand that problem and you thoroughly understand precise formula how to solve that problem. Okay. You know the solution because you understand the process completely. From that onward, that mathematical problem is no more a problem anymore. Gone. I don't know where. Before it was a great problem, great difficulty you were doing it, but once you understand it, that problem is solved. Once you understand the solution with precision, that is solved. And whenever that arises, it's not a problem anymore. Just like that, this path consciousness is, before you don't know precisely about mind and matter. And when at one moment when you understand exactly about mind and matter, that understanding, that precise understanding is developed in that path consciousness. That understanding, that completely understand that path consciousness. Once that part consciousness understood it, that is the answer to all things. And that is enlightenment. Because of that, that is not a problem anymore, which means all the mental defilements that is respectively related to that level is all gone, no more. That is how it works. Okay? I try my best to explain with the way we can correlate or compare with. So that is how the path consciousness arises. It arose only once. Okay? Only once. But only all that it needs is once. And that gives the perfect understanding. That consciousness, okay, the jnana, the wisdom that comes with that path consciousness, give you the clear understanding, and there is no more problem, and there is clarity, and there is purely a highway to go. No obstacle anymore. So that's how it goes in. And as we all have discussed, there are four levels of path consciousness, four stages. First stream winner, once returner, non-returner, and arahata. So four different kind of path consciousness, and each one eliminate or uprooted a certain type of or a certain level or a certain degree of mental defilements. And when it is done, it is gone. So don't think that it's a great power coming from the universe or this or that. It is the pure understanding, that is the insight, that is the wisdom that clear away all veils, all delusion and all illusion. And nothing but clarity and perfect understanding remains. That's how path consciousness works, and that's what it is. And you do not know when that path consciousness will arise. In this waking up moment, or eating, or sitting in deep meditation, or walking meditation, or while you are jumping, or while you're running, you don't know. But as long as you have that mindfulness, 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 continuous there, at one moment it'll come. That's why don't stop. Don't stop. But at the same time, that's an instruction. It's given. But we all know by now, we all are different people. We all have different psyche. We all walk differently. Even though it is said, we don't. Some people do, some people don't. Some people do go halfway and do that. Because at that level, you feel very comfortable. You are quite aware of everything that is happening, especially if you're doing a proper sitting meditation or proper formal walking meditation or retreat kind of daily activities. Those moments, it's perfect. It just goes like a clockwork, all these knowing and seeing. You see correctly, and you know correctly. Seeing correctly, know correctly. But at the same time, if you are not in this deeper formal stage, while you're moving around too, you still know, but at a different level, at more of a flow. At those levels, it's less and less of a cessation, but you can see the things move in a state of a flow. But regardless, if you incline your mind in between those flow, you will still see cessation. I'm talking about very active activities, but you, one must incline the mind. And because of that kind of a stage, you become a little bit careless. Okay, you don't put too much, oh, like you say, I'm aware, I know, and you just like to keep it that way. I'm keeping my awareness. But that's not enough. If you want to really, okay, reach the goal. It must be continuous active. But there's quite, okay, it's a quite of a condition in which you could just sort of a flow into it in the flowy mode. Even though you might be doing, let's say, even though you might be, let's pick up something, snowshoeing. I don't know, snowshoeing or skiing or something that is active. You can keep your awareness quite sharp and quite clear, but at the same time, it is not the same. It is not the same. So that is the point they are making. Must see it to the end. But some people do, some people don't. And when you don't, that's different. And when you don't, it comes to another point to discuss about. And here, okay, people, especially people while you are at that level, they start talking about these things, okay, among themselves, of course. And some people even talk about Ariyaship. Okay, let's don't go to the higher level, just stay at the lower level. Okay, it's the first dream winner, the first noble person. Okay, say, so, oh, I am a, like a, my teacher told me, I am a Ariya now. Okay, but he or she is not lying, but that is how she understood, or he understood what the teacher said. Okay, but the teacher would never say that you are an Ariya. The teacher would never give you a certificate you are an Ariya. But the teacher might talk in such a way based on this, okay, let's say to simplify it. You have 1 to 12. Now you are quite skillful. So you have all the requirements. You have all the requirements to be a Sotapanna. He didn't say you are. But at the same time, our mind is very elated around that time, even though we are in a state of equanimity. But when we are not in the deeper state of equanimity, we have that exhilarating experience. You're high, like to put in a very simple word, you're in a high mode. And your heart is always in a fluttering moment, very nice feeling. That kind of a thing, and you tend to think the way you want to believe. And I have talked with a few people who said they are Ariya, and everybody has their own takes. Okay? Everybody has their own take, and they expressed it. And finally, I asked my teacher, okay, just straight out, okay, so-and-so said this and this, this and this, and the teacher, and in fact, I think you all might have heard it if you have listened carefully to the Chami Seyaroji Dharma talk in our, I think it is on the video, I think now, said, nobody can exactly tell who is Ariya or this Ariya or that Ariya, other than the Buddha. Nobody exactly know who that person is. So that is one thing my teacher said. But we can try to guesstimate based on what they have experienced and based on how they live. That's it. So nobody will be confirming you. That is one. And that is some of the things that I heard from my teachers, okay, my teachers, me, which I have full faith and confidence in. Okay, I will talk with very strong, okay, statements with definitive nature. But there's another monk, they are not my teacher, but it's a reputable teacher. What he said was, when you think, okay, he said, when you think you are a Ariya, okay, wait for 1 year. Okay, you are a Ariya, don't say that wait for a year, and in that 1 year, try and analyze it. Okay, there's a lot of things. What kind of things to watch? Okay, what kind of things you would do or you won't do when you become an Ariya, that kind of thing. And in 1 year, if you do not transgress or if you do not do anything what you are not supposed to or what that Ariya is not supposed to be at that mental state with, then you can confidently say that I am this or I am that. That is, one of the monks told me, but not my immediate teachers. He said, wait for a year and wait for it. And then these people who claim to, some people claim it, oh, I don't know myself, but the teacher said, that's one way of saying this. Another way is, okay, oh, everybody is talking about me that I am this or I'm that. That's another type. And some people just come out, I am it, that kind of things too, they say. And personally, I don't know, but I listen. Okay, very good for you. That's it, very good for you. Because if my teachers cannot penetrate into that situation, I am far, far beneath to understand this. What I'm saying is, you might come across a certain stage, a certain people too. At that moment, simply listen. Don't discriminate, don't judge. Oh, if it is good, good. And probably you should better read the scriptures and see, make sure that you are all in line with the scripture. That's the best one can tell as a Dharma friend. That kind of nature it has too. So that is in terms of the people who are at the very high level, who are Ariya, can encounter, and you might come across, and if you come across, that is the way one can look at it. Based on my teacher's instruction, that's how I understand. So that's one thing. And another thing is, here, you attain this path consciousness, or you become an Ariya, people are. And to be able to do that, you must have at least insight knowledge of equanimity, and you honed into your skills, okay, honed into the skills of all the you have experiences, and you are quite being skillful. But quite being skillful, so there's a very high probability if you practice non-stop, you will attain that Ariya-ship. But there are different type of people and different type of personalities. I'll give you one example. Our teachers and our teacher's teacher is Mahasi Seado. And Mahasi Seado has his own teacher, it's a Mula Mingun Seado. Mingun Seado. He is the one who actually started this. He lives in the lower part of Burma, and it is in the 1940s and 50s. And these kind of things, like internet might be even slower, these news go very fast and very wide among who practice. They say, oh, there's a monk, he's a arhat, he has come and he's teaching us and so on and so forth. And it vibrates so much, even the monks at the very high level in Burma, very high level. As an example is Mahasi Seado. He's one of the highest in the group. Like he is one of the key presider or questioner in the sixth Buddhist council. There are only six since Buddha passed away. That kind of caliber. Okay. So a lot of monks of the very high caliber, both theory as well as in the practical level, on the level, even those kind of monks went and practiced under that monk. He just is a little in lower part of Burma, not a big monastery, nothing, just a little village, in a half forest setting, half a little village, that kind, that place you went in. They all went and practiced. And of course, one is Mahasi Seado. Mahasi Seado is, he learned from this monk who is said to be Arahat. And what he did was, he popularized it. What he did was, as he knew the scriptures so well, he pulled out anything and everything that you can directly show that it is the works of the words of the Buddha, the teachings of the Buddha, put it theory and practice, put it in such a way people who doesn't know much about scriptures and Tipitaka can also practice and learn. And people who are very learned people can also understand and learn. In other words, it attracts both, okay, average intelligence people and highly intelligent people. And especially in the West, they like to go with theory and practice. Sometimes a lot more theory than the practice. But they just simply don't want to blindly do things. So it is very good to explain and teach in the West. And because of their efforts, there's a huge volume of Buddhist literature being pulled out of the Tipitaka and put in a perfectly unique package. And all that I am teaching, all that I am talking are those what I heard from my teachers and what these monks have laid down and make it ready for us. I'm not a scholar, I don't read, I don't attend any Buddhist school or Buddhist classes whatsoever. But they make that ready for us. If you practice, you can correlate quite well. So what it is he could, to go back to the main story that we are talking about, Mahasi Seado went in there, and also there are many great monks went in there, and there is another monk, I don't know, some of you might heard it, some might not have heard it, it's called Tampulu Seado. Tampulu Seado means the monks from the little hill. That's truly translated. And he actually is resided in California, Northern California, under the forest type. He doesn't live among the people, and it's really forestful. You have to go hours to just to see him in the setting. And he has his own disciple, of course, and now he passed away. In other words, about the same age and rank with the Mahasi Seado. So they all went in and practiced. Under that, Mingon Seado, the one who has started this whole wave of Satipatthana Vipassana. And when they are practicing, then everybody progressed, and one day that monk, the teacher, said, "Oh, we have a thief in our group," he said. So suddenly it's a very strange word. Everybody pick up the ear and something like, what's a thief in a group? Who steal what? But what they said was, there was a monk here, okay, who's practicing this Satipatthana Vipassana, which means to become Ariya and finally to attain Nibbana, to escape from the realm of suffering. Okay. This method will directly get you there, to the realm of suffering, the end of all suffering, Nibbana. But there was a monk, what it said was, that monk is, and I believe that Mingon Seado has also not only Vipassana, he also have the psychical power, both Samatha as well as Vipassana. There was a monk among us, like, he's not supposed to take the full liberation. In other words, his intent is to become eventually a Buddha and teach at one time as a Buddha. So he has to go and suffer eons and eons and eons of lives to suffer before he could become a Buddha. So once that person has intended his mind, okay, I would like to become a Buddha one day, but at the same time he practiced. Okay, regardless how much he practiced, regardless how much he have achieved this inside knowledge of equanimity and adaptation and right there, he will never attain, he will never become a Ariya. Because once you become an Ariya, maximum lifespan is, or life cycle is 7. It can be finished within 1 or 2, but maximum is 7. But to become a Buddha is you have to go eons and eons and eons of lives more. You have to struggle, you have to perfect, you have to practice, you will go up, you will go down, you will become animal again, you will become human again, and so on. If you look at the Buddha Gautama life history, okay, the Sanskrit life history, you will see even after he has attained the prophesizing of another Buddha, you will become a Buddha, and after that, he becomes animals again. And that's why samsara is a scary place. You don't know where you will get there. So to make the long story short, that monk is intended, even though he has achieved everything whatever is taught, he could never penetrate into that layer of Mega Chaita and become a Ariya. It just stopped because of the intent, what we has, his intention. And that's what is meant by the monk, that there was a thief. A thief means he's trying to go to Nibbana, but actually he cannot because his intention is different. So those kind of things, among all these things, do exist. And it's directly from that code. And this one is well established. That's one. And another one is, I do not know personally. My teachers who taught me didn't teach me, but it is a very well-known fact in the Buddhist, what you call, circles. What is said is, at the end of this Buddha Sasana, at the end of this Buddha Sasana, what will happen is, which is about another 2,400, 500 years, all the relics of the Buddhas, everything will accumulate in one place, and that will be the image of the Buddha, more like alive, not really alive, but the image of the Buddha who can function. Okay, and then that Buddha will give the final sermon to the people. And a lot of Buddhists believe in it, and they practice and they practice and they practice with an intention of so that they could be alive at that period, as a human being and listen to the teachings of that Buddhist image and attain Nibbana. That's a very well-known saying, and a lot of people believe and a lot of people practice. So they shoot target to that period, and then they will attain Nibbana at that time. But between now and then, they will work hard for the Dharma, that is another. And once you have that kind of intention, that person cannot become an Ariya, because that intention automatically blocked it. And also some people, they do not want to, okay, they don't wait for that, but they do not want to attain Nibbana right away or Ariyaship right away, but they want to do more work for the Dharma, and they set their mind. And when they set their mind to, you can go as far as high as you want, but you will never penetrate into the Mega Chaita and become a Ariya. Those are the few ones, and it is, you will see among them. So don't think everybody who become a Sankharupa Kanyana will become a Ariya. Most will, some don't. And some think they do, but they are not. So that is a very tricky situation, and at the same time, we all know conceit, mana, is totally expelled and uprooted only when you become a arahata, the final released person. Okay, so if you are a first stream winner, you have that conceit and pride of the Dharma that you have attained. Those are the little things one need to know, and that is the knowledge into the adaptation, okay? Insight into the adaptation. And 12. And the 13 is Gotrabhu. Gotrabhu is, to make a long story short, once you attain that, once you got to that level, what is like is, to, I'll go with the example first. You are climbing up the mountain. Okay, let's say let's look up some of the legends of Tibetan Buddhism. There's a Shangri-La. Shangri-La is a place of more like a paradise and peace. Something like that is the most I know about. To go there, you have to climb the mountain, climb the mountain, climb the mountain. And in the next valley, there's a Shangri-La, the city of Shangri-La, where there's all these heavenly thing, peace and happiness, and all these things are there. I don't know with precision, but you climb and you climb and you climb, and finally you got to the last mountain range and to the top. When you got to the top, what happened is you can see that Shangri-La, you can see that place, a place of paradise. But you're not there yet, but you can see it. Okay. Just like that, you are practicing on the number 12, insight knowledge of adaptation. At one moment, you got to the insight knowledge of Gotrabhu. Gotrabhu is the insight of the threshold. Threshold between this side and that side. You are right on the boundary. And when you are on the threshold, then you can see it. You haven't experienced it, that you can see it. You are right at the borderline. You are right at the threshold. That's the 13th level of insight. And the next is, of course, you experience the mega cheta, path consciousness, and you become an Ariya. So those are the few little information and knowledge at this level one should keep in your side pocket if you are practicing and if you are carrying on. So may all of you be able to practice Satipatthana Vipassana meditation, and may you be able to go through all stages of insight and eventually attain the noble personship as soon as possible. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Buddham bhujemi, Dhammam bhujemi, Sangham bhujemi.